There's an awful lot going on in today's gospel from Matthew. We have Matthew himself, the tax collector, called to follow Jesus. We have the dinner party with the sinners and the tax collectors and the disapproving Pharisees. And then we have these two stories of healing. It is interesting to note that by far the majority of preaching commentaries I consulted only talk about Matthew. Maybe they point towards those women, sort of to say, like, and Jesus loved women too, see? But they seem to want to rest with Matthew. Even our collect, that prayer that we say at the beginning of the service that sort of points to the themes for the day, only names Matthew. It's almost like we hear Jesus say, go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. And then the church has said, no thanks. We'll stick with Matthew. This says a great deal about the church. It says very little about Jesus. And it says even less about today's story. So today we're going to look at that second half of the story. It begins in a fairly usual way. Jairus is not the only desperate parent to seek out Jesus. He's not even the only high-status desperate parent to seek out Jesus. Because when you're a desperate parent, you will go wherever you think the help is. You don't worry about propriety anymore. You just go looking for help. And Jesus, who we know has a particular love and care for those on the margins, does not disdain anyone who seeks him out, even the high status. And so Jesus goes with Jairus, and the crowd follows. And then there is an interruption. A woman. Every bit as desperate as Jairus, but not given a name, pushes through the crowd. And touching only the hem of Jesus' robe, claims healing for herself. This particular desperate woman, the story tells us, had suffered from a hemorrhage for 12 years. Let's be honest. She was not bleeding from her elbow for 12 years. This woman had suffered for 12 years with some sort of terrible gynecological disorder. It's not a word you get to use from the pulpit very often. Physically, socially, emotionally debilitating. She must have felt awful, exhausted, and sick all the time. And on top of that, she was effectively an outcast in the community due to the contagious ritual impurity that she bare. And her ritual impurity was not about illness. It wasn't about being sick. It was the same ritual impurity that all women experienced as a matter of course every month during their menstruation. Another word that doesn't come up from the pulpit very often. This was an impurity tied to many things. The awesome, dangerous power of fertility and childbirth. Life and death right next to each other. Meaning it needed to be treated carefully. The symbolism of blood, which represents life itself from God. And also, of course, the desire to control women and women's bodies. All mixed up together. So this woman's marginalization was about more than just ritual impurity. It was about a woman's ritual impurity. And her suffering was about more than that ritual impurity. It was about more even than her physical burden. Her suffering was tied to how her disorder impacted her role and her identity as a woman, impacting her ability to be a wife and a mother, to be sexually and reproductively healthy. Such struggles are hard for women today. So imagine the scale of the struggle for a woman at a time and place when those were her only options for full participation in the life of her community. No wonder she was desperate. But she wasn't only desperate. She was bold, brazen even. You know, once you start looking, the Gospels are filled with rather brazen women. But this woman, in pushing through the crowd, in reaching out to touch Jesus, in demanding physical and sexual health for herself, was among the most brazen indeed, even if she did try to do it secretly. And her healing was granted. Her anonymity, not so much. Jesus noticed. It's what Jesus does. Jesus noticed and called out to whoever had been in such need of him. And so the woman comes forward in fear and trembling. She knows she has received a miracle. That alone would leave me trembling. But she also has every reason to expect to be punished, to be shamed. That has, after all, been her life for the past 12 years, and now she has taken liberties that were not hers to take. She has contaminated men. She has interfered with the desires of Jairus and with the plan of Jesus. Fear and trembling indeed. And Jesus, on his way to see one daughter, calls her daughter too. She is as important to him as Jairus's little girl is to Jairus. Instead of shaming her, he claims an intimate relationship with her, and he commends her. Her faith, not his power alone, has made her well. Her faith in him, yes, but also her faith in herself, in her right to physical and social and sexual health and wholeness as a woman. It is, I think, so important to note that this healing story says nothing at any point about sin or forgiveness. For contrary to far too much teaching, none of which comes from Jesus, there is nothing shameful in being a woman and having a body. Daughter, says Jesus, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease. And that is plenty of good news for one story, but this story has still more because Jesus has not forgotten about Jairus' daughter, although Jairus must have been so afraid that he had. It's hard to be patient when we are afraid. When there is no time to lose, when we have no control over something that matters more to us than even our own lives. And Jairus, it is reasonable to assume, would not have been accustomed to waiting while people like this brazenly faithful woman were attended to first. But what could he do but wait? Impatient and anxious and angry, while this awkwardly powerful and holy man, his daughter's only hope, took his sweet time. And then word comes from home. And his worst fears are realized. It's too late. That woman got his miracle, and now his daughter is dead. But Jesus turns away none who are seeking. There is enough wholeness, enough peace, enough love for everyone. The nameless woman took nothing away from Jairus in claiming healing for herself. There is enough for all. And so for the second time in this story, Jesus doesn't do what might be expected of him. Upon hearing of the girl's death, he doesn't apologize. He doesn't offer comfort or even stop. He tells Jairus not to fear but to believe and continues on his way and does precisely what he had set out to do, what Jairus so desperately needed him to do. He restores Jairus' daughter to life. And then the gospel writer tells us, in a couple of verses past what we read this morning, that the girl is 12 years old. 12. The number of years for which the woman had bled. But also, and I think more significantly, the age at which Jewish tradition identifies girls as becoming women. Jairus' daughter is not simply a daughter restored to her loving parents. She is a girl raised from death in order to become a woman. A woman with a body deserving of respect and care and wholeness, just like her brazenly faithful older sister. Jesus offers this respect and care and wholeness to both of these women and to Jairus. And to each one of us, body and soul. This story tells us so much more than that women, like all those on the margins, are welcome in the family of God. This story tells us that God loves our bodies, all of our bodies, and everything about our bodies, regardless of our gender, or our sexual identity, or our age, or our ability, or our health. It is an invitation to claim our own wholeness, to reject the many narratives in our tradition and in our society that shame us for having the wrong bodies, the wrong desires, and instead to embrace God's great love for the bodies that God created. And it is a promise that there is enough love, enough wholeness for all of us to get what we need. Whether you are the brazen woman, or the dying daughter, or the anxious parent, or the privileged and respected community leader, or even Matthew, the tax collector, he gets to come back now too. Every part of you is loved by God. Rejoice in that good news. Share that good news. Live fully and completely into that good news until all the fear is gone and only peace and wholeness remain. For you, and for me, and for each and every one of God's beloved, beloved children.